family of companies. With an endless supply of energy, he deploys his experience and passion to unleash the potential in others and share the stories of the region's most influential leaders. And now, here's Mark Haney.
So it's Zero Dark 30 this morning. I gave my wife a hug like I always do every morning, and I whispered our reassuring reminder that everything is going to be all right, all right, all right. Yeah, baby, this is Entrepreneurs Unlimited. This is the Haney Biz Project, and we are helping unleash potential right here in Sacramento, one business at a time, one family at a time, and yes, one entrepreneur at a time. I'm Mark Haney. I am the investorpreneur and Sacramento's chief dreaming officer. I'm joined by my main man, Marcus Haney. How you doing, buddy?
I am fantastic. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Now, are you hanging or banging this morning?
You know, we're down here on Saturday morning. I'm always banging, but I think that we should kind of clarify to our audience out there what exactly hanging or banging
is. Yeah, why don't you help us out with that?
Well, hanging, as you know, just hanging out, doing your thing, not necessarily moving towards a target or a goal. But if you're banging, you're out there working on an opportunity, the best opportunity at the right time, and you're at your very best at that opportunity, and you're doing everything possible to get it done.
At your very best, on your very best opportunities.
No doubt.
And today, that is what we are doing. We're going to look to unleash the opportunities right here in Sacramento, unleash the potential of entrepreneurs.
God, that's something so different. Well, let's talk about what Sacramento's investorpreneur is. Why don't you talk us through that a little bit?
Well, I'm the self-appointed investorpreneur.
Hey, I just appointed you, so not necessarily self, right?
Well, you know, and I'm an investor / entrepreneur. So I started off as an entrepreneur, and now I'm doing a little bit of investing. And I'm an investor that invests in entrepreneurs. I don't invest in the product. Right. I invest in the people behind the product. I invest in the rock star, not the song that the rock star is singing.
Gotcha, not the album.
Yeah. So absolutely. Today we are going to bring on some guys that are real rock stars in business. Today we are going to bring on some guys that really have some gifts. And I find a way. I mean, as the investorpreneur, you know, I find a way to see the greatness in people. Right. I find a way to find the gift, and everybody's got a gift. So if we can figure out a way to find those gifts in people, wow, the sky is the limit. And today I will define, a little bit later, I'm going to define my role as the investorpreneur. I'm going to share the investorpreneurial perspective of selecting opportunities. I will also introduce to you two very gifted entrepreneurs that know firsthand about assessing business opportunities right here in Sacramento. Later in the show, we will meet Greg Roberti, the owner of Westwood Benson Business Brokers. But after the break, you will meet Joshua Tillman, who launched one of the hottest tech companies in Sacramento's emerging entrepreneurial landscape. Josh is the founder and CEO of the CRM software company DialSource. DialSource received some funding from my buddies over there at the private equity firm of DCA Capital. Join the conversation on Facebook Live. This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited, broadcasting from Sports 1140 KHDK, streaming live podcast and YouTube at HaneyBiz.com.
And now, back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with the entrepreneur's advocate, Mark Haney.
All right, welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited, presented by my buddies at Sun Systems Technologies. I'm Mark Haney, and today I am joined by Joshua Tillman, the founder and CEO of DialSource, Sacramento's fast-growing CRM software company that helps medium and large-sized businesses accelerate their growth. How you doing today, Josh?
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Mark.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, you and I were talking during the break, and I said, what would you be doing if you were not down here? What would you be doing if you were not down here at the studio with Mark Haney?
I'd be at our offices downtown.
Incredible. I mean, how many hours a week do you work?
It varies by what the issues and the challenges are by that week, but a lot.
Well, we'll get into that in a minute, but why don't you give our listeners and give us an overview of DialSource and what you guys do?
Sure. We're a software organization that helps other businesses make intelligent decisions on who they're selling to, what the products are being purchased, servicing organizations so they know who their client is and how they can make better decisions in those engagements in selling and servicing.
So what kind of decisions do they make? I mean, walk me through an example of what one of your client, how your client might use your software.
Sure. A business like our partners in Sacramento, the Kings, might want to know when you're at the arena, what you engage in and what you like to purchase and where you're sitting, and so they can provide a better experience when it comes time for renewals, when it comes time to servicing, if there may have been an issue there. So these kind of data points that our technology helps to collect and identify allows organizations to make quicker, better decisions.
So the Sacramento Kings are always trying to. We have season tickets, but I didn't renew one of our groups of tickets from the old arena, and so I have my sales guy. I think his name is Nathan. Great guy, trying to call me and try to convert me to get some more tickets. Is your system, your software, part of his tools? Is that in his toolbox?
Sure, it sure is. And so they can make decisions on when to call you at the right time, or if they see you at an event and have a conversation because you're at the game and want to talk about some new product offering. These are our data points that are used so that they're making decisions in a timely manner.
So this is something that actually bolts onto their standard CRM system like Salesforce, right?
Yeah, that's correct. We bring in the components to make calls, have conversations, and then streamline these labor-intensive activities within the CRM, both whether it's for Salesforce in this case or in others with Microsoft Dynamics, for example.
So we talk about the Sacramento Kings as one of your clients. What does the marketplace look like for this kind of product?
Well, it's large, I think, because our potential client is an organization that makes and receives phone calls that uses a CRM to manage the data. And so when you think about it, it could be widespread from locally here, like with the Kings, to somebody like the American Diabetes Association, who has a completely different business model, collecting donations on campaigns and working with previous donors for things of that manner. And so we are continually learning new verticals in which our technology is being used for various reasons and problems we set out to solve throughout the course and evolution of the business.
So the scalability is really incredible, but how did you get started? You don't start off, did you start off with this giant dream of taking this thing national? Because you have customers all over the country, but I mean, how did you guys start?
Yeah, it's a continual evolution, and I always find myself reevaluating what the future may look like. But in this particular case, I was doing my undergraduate at UC Davis, and I was doing a research paper and project on telecommunication technology and processes. And the one thing led to a next, and I was working on some prototypes with some buddies while I was at Davis, and we started selling some prototypes to some guys in the Sacramento area in 2006 and 2007. And from there, it became identifying more problems, providing more solutions, and convincing more of my buddies to join the fight.
You said identifying problems. Like, are you talking about in making how people make sales?
Yeah, in the original genesis of the product, it was to make more calls more efficiently in reaching people for the right reason. So instead of how I started selling, which was pick up a book of data and make some outbound calls and have some conversations and make some notes, I figured that with technology, there has to be a better way to leverage data to do it in a more efficient, streamlined manner.
Yeah, I used to operate some call centers myself and was a sales guy that did stuff over the phone. And I had a shoebox with these little cards. And then when we decided to set the date of when to call, it was like a tickler file. We moved the card to the next date in the shoebox.
Yeah.
That's how and then we turned that into software ourselves, in fact.
Yeah, and that's similar how we wound up starting, and then it led to not only making the right call at the right time to have a conversation, but then if the conversation goes well and somebody's interested in a product, now you have all these processes that you have to do by updating the data in the CRM, maybe sending Mark the right email, and knowing if you looked at the email to call you because you looked at a particular component of a product. And so acquiring these data points and using them to make real-time decisions helps organizations better align their go-to-market strategy in both sales and service.
So a sales guy like me doesn't forget to call the guy back or, you know, hey, there's a trigger right there that should have prompted me that is good reason to reach out. I don't don't forget.
That's right. Or if one of your good clients calls in, we can identify who they are as a good client and route them to the appropriate thing, notifying, is it a seven-figure-a-year client that's calling me, or is it a brand-new lead that might have just come on the website, and how we have to interact differently with different data points.
So you talked about bringing your friends on initially. Tell us how you got started. Do you have partners? And I know now you've got funded by the guys at DCA. Give us the evolution of the business partner strategy.
Sure. You know, we really focused originally on solving problems, which evolved into building product. And from building the product, then we started creating revenue from that product. And that allowed us to go out and hire more people. And that allowed us to then learn, I think, the mentality of being lean and mean, as opposed to saying, I've got an idea and I'm originally chasing funding to follow that. And so that allowed us to develop an associated culture.
The scrappy culture versus the go get funded first culture. You basically went out and drove a real world business and generated revenue before you got your funding.
Yeah, that's exactly what we did. So we, in a nutshell, we identified a problem, we built a product, we went to market with it, and we got some well-known clients that had a lot of neat and nice things to say about our technology.
Nice.
And so that evolution allowed us to learn through a lot of hard knocks along the way, but made us a smarter organization as a result.
You know, you talk about being a smarter organization, but now when you come in and you bring in DCA Capital as one of your investors, tell us what that process looks like. A lot of our listeners think about what's it like to go get private equity money. Tell us about that experience.
It was a good experience, and I would do it again with them. They've been a great partner first and foremost, but it was a complicated process to kind of evolve from the friends and family type of style of seed funding into moving into an institutional round of funding. And so it required a lot of energy and understanding of financial compliance and organization so that we could have all the right data to convey that what has happened historically and what will happen in the future if we can execute on our roadmap and our strategy.
How did you choose DCA? There's a lot of private equity companies.
There are, and we had had conversations pretty much from coast to coast, but it was important to me growing up in Sacramento and starting this out of UC Davis and bringing in other talented kids from UC Davis to generate funds locally and to have this flow locally. I figured that wouldn't always be the case. Down the road, we'd have to go get funding from the Valley, from New York and other areas, but this was a unique opportunity, and with our partnership with our good friends, the King, it made a lot of sense that we were going to build in Sacramento, stay in Sacramento.
Wow. We're staying in your hometown, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
What a concept. That's great. I love that. That's what this show is about. Now, you've recently added to your team. I know you brought on one of the guys that led sales for the Kings. I want to talk about your CEO style and then surrounding yourself with the right team to make things fly for your company.
And I would say, Mark, that's probably one of the most important things for a CEO to do, in my opinion, is to identify talent. And so as a growing organization, a CEO has to build and solve these issues for themselves until they get to that inflection point. And so to your point, we were able to align again with our great partners, the Kings, and fortunate enough to bring on their former VP of sales, Stephen Leopold, who was able to help us take our sales and strategy into the next evolution. And that's something that we have done recently. And so if you are able to hit this level of success, then you need to be able to have the bandwidth to continue to provide the quality of service and product that got you there in the first place at an increased scale. And that means bringing in the right generals and lieutenants, et cetera, to make intelligent decisions and help me guide the organization.
Right. So as the CEO, you're also very technical. You're a product guy. You've got Steven, who has obviously been very successful in sales. He's on board. Does that round out your team, your management team, or are there other pieces? What are those other pieces? What might they look like?
There are other pieces. We just brought in a head to our customer success management team, who's a veteran in the segment and that particular portion of it. We've also been bringing in marketing components, PR components. We're really hiring across the board at the moment. We're looking for people to the point that you made. We're surrounding ourselves with problem-solving individuals that are not afraid to roll up their sleeve, not afraid to be there on a Saturday morning, because we've got well-named, high-profile clients love to use our technology, and that's encouraging and it's exciting.
We talk about culture a lot on this show because the right culture brings in the right team and so on. And you've got a culture that's different than the typical high-tech culture where you guys have a cool office right there at the King's Center, but there aren't these, you guys are working 7 days a week, cranking old school versus the current high tech, which is sort of sometimes, I mean, we had one guest on the show that has a place to take a nap in their office. Describe the difference and why that works for you.
Well, sure. Like we've been discussing, we're a product-driven organization, so we only knew that if we couldn't kill it, we couldn't eat it. And so we survived by our own wits and ability to sell and service. And that was an important culture for me to continue to build in the organization. So by the time we were in a position to get funded, we were still well-organized to use that funding for growth as opposed to maybe, let's say, a sexy image from the outside, because I really wanted the product and the clients to be the image, and the people within the organization to be building it. So that's where we put a lot of energy.
And the value of your company is greater if you're driving that revenue, so you didn't have to give up quite as much as what some of these entrepreneurs do when all they have is a dream and a concept. You had something going, which makes it a lot safer investment for a private equity guy or an investor. But I mean, you don't have to give up quite so much of the company.
Yeah, that's well said. After being in business for the better part of a decade, building a strong foundation in multiple product iterations, building a team, building a client base, and having very solid revenue, I think allowed us to be less operationally risky from an investor's perspective, as opposed to, I think I can build a product here and I think I can generate a lot of revenue as a result. And so that's why I think personally it's very important for anybody who's thinking, how do I get going on this, is to identify a problem and build a solution to that. And in my experience, it was a software-based product problem.
Well, I think when I first met you, I was emceeing the Stoll Reeves Innovation Awards in Sacramento, and you were up for an award. I think you won something. Tell us about how important is it to win these awards? How much does that help you in your business?
It does help within the business. It brings light to the business that people might not see who were aligned with that particular award or presentation, but I think really it helps in recruiting. People start to see that it's not just the clients that are saying great things about the technology, but that the technology itself is being recognized,
yeah.
And it's that these individuals are the ones that are building the technology. So it's really the individuals that are contributing that are receiving that award. And so I think that rallies people around to say, I want to be a part of something that's being recognized as doing something good.
Validation. Now let's talk a little bit about, we only have a minute or so left, but tell us a little bit about the future of DialSource. Where do you see this thing going in the coming months, years?
Sure. Well, we just actually doubled our footprint at our offices at 660 J with the Kings. They were able to help us do that.
Wow.
We want to thank them for that. But we're going to continue to be in Sacramento. I'd say I could see within next year we'll probably move over to a larger building that's coming up in the area, but we're going to keep our headquarters within walking distance of the Kings. We like to
nice.
Go to this. We've got season tickets for the executives, for the employees. So it's real nice to work till 7 o'clock
nice.
And then send over some engineers and some sales guys to a game that they walk, 80 feet to get to.
Wow. So, I just wish I was a high tech guy. I would be applying for that job right now. I want to now just one last thing. So you're seven day a week, 24/7 guy. What do you do for fun? I mean, how do you release it all?
I really grew up in the outdoors, and I like that quite a lot. So I'll take a break and maybe head out into the mountains and do some wildlife photography, some hiking, some camping, and get out away from cell service and away from all those issues, even if only for very short bursts.
Very unique, hobby, and obviously a very unique opportunity and a great company there at DialSource, and it's based right here in Sacramento, and it's growing like crazy. I want to thank you for coming on the show. When we come up, when we get back here, we're going to meet Greg Roberti, the owner of the business broker, Westwood Benson. Join the conversation on Facebook Live. This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with Haney Biz's Mark Haney.
I'm having a little bit of trouble with my headphones. Let's see if I can, Marcus, can you fix these for me? Little technical difficulties. Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited, presented by Sun Systems Technology. Again, I'm Mark Haney. And today I have Greg Roberti down here on the show. He's the owner of the broker, the business broker, Westwood Benson. Now, Greg, can you give us a little bit about Westwood Benson and your background?
And the second thing is we assist owners with selling or buying businesses.
And what's your background? How did you get into this stuff?
Well, I bought and sold several businesses myself. And in the process, I realized how much easier the transaction was if you had a good broker and advisor involved.
Yeah.
And so really through that process is how I got to know it. And actually, one of the brokers that brokered a business that I bought, and later I went back to him to sell it, said to me after the transaction, why don't you come to work for me? You know the process, and that's how I get started.
So, you know, a lot of people are out there, and the process of selling your business is a little scary. Why don't we demystify that process? Walk me through what, maybe there's nothing completely typical, but walk us through a typical transaction, and how does it start, and then what does the ending look like?
Well, it starts with an owner deciding that he wants to sell. Maybe he's going to retire or do something else. But and that starts with evaluation. Until he really knows what to expect and we're on the same page as to what's a reasonable price to expect, it's hard to go forward.
How do you come up with practical evaluations? Because most of us entrepreneurs think our business is worth a little more than what it might actually be on the open market.
Well, there's appraisal standards that we go by, but every company's different. And often we'll have people say, well, I heard my friend, he sold his business for 7 times earnings or whatever.
Right.
And a lot of times I'll tell them that the end of last year I checked and General Motors was selling for 4 times earnings. Google was 30 times earnings.
General Motors, they're the ones that got the government bailout, aren't they? If
that's
I remember correctly.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
What if that devalued them at all? I don't know. Okay, so yeah, companies, they're all shapes and sizes. A fast-growing software company might have a valuation on earnings, right? Or excuse me, on revenue, right? So it was 5, 7, even 10 times revenue or projected revenue. And maybe a small distribution company might have something a lot lower. How do you help navigate those waters?
Well, you look at a number of factors with the business. One of them is the growth rate and the potential to grow. A software company may have a growth capability getting to 50 or 100 million. Maybe that distribution company only has a capability reasonably to go to 10 million.
Okay.
So that's part of it. And then the rate of growth. How much are they growing every year? Or are they growing? We get people come to us, they've been declining every year for 3-4 years. And that's always difficult because most buyers are going to look at that trend and assume that that trend's going to continue.
Yeah. So, yeah. But so now, how small of a business does it typically come through your organization, and then how big do they get? What's kind of the size range that's typical?
Yeah, in businesses, of course, come in all sizes. We generally handle our sweet spot or businesses from about $1 million up to about $20 million.
A million in sales price.
Sales
price. Okay,
right.
So something with a value of $1 million or up to 20. So it's kind of that, call it a small business.
Right.
Yeah, typical small business. So these guys come in and you've established a listing price, if you will, right? They've kind of in their mind, it's a little bit like selling a house, right? So you, hey, I think my house is worth about this. Let's put it on the market, Greg. You shop it, right? And then, so you decide on that. Let's say we think it's worth $3 million. What do you do at that point?
We establish a target market. So we figure out who is the best buyer for that company. Sometimes it can be a synergistic buyer who's looking to add on to what they're already doing. Sometimes it's a financial buyer like a private equity firm that's looking to take that company and grow it and maybe sell it in 5 or 10 years. And other times it's just a buyer looking to buy it as a standalone platform company, you know, private individual.
Now, like selling a house, I've seen people get really nervous. Some people are really nervous about selling their house. And a business is kind of like their baby in so many ways. Do people get, is it a high stress kind of feel when somebody's thinking about selling their business and what's that going to do for my employees and what's that going to do for my income? And, you know, it's really, for business owners, that could be a big part of their net worth.
It's very intense. And a lot of people think it's more stressful to buy a business than sell it. But really, we see most of the stress on the sellers. And as you said, it is.
Because they're starting to think about what they might do with that money afterwards. And if that thing starts falling apart after the LOI, it can create all kinds of drama.
Right. And they don't want to disrupt their business or their employees. So they try to do this whole process most of the time completely confidential.
Yeah.
So the first time the employees know the company sold is after it's sold and they meet the new owner.
So the buyer comes in, the seller decides, I'm going to sell for $3 million. You get an offer, 2.7. There's an acceptance. I use that term, the LOI or the term sheet, right? So you get that agreement, and then there's the due diligence process. What's that look like for the seller?
It's intense. The buyer typically, and the larger the business, the more sophisticated the buyer is, they will want a lot of data, a lot of material. They'll want to look at every single little thing, and they'll ask a lot of questions.
They really try to look up your skirt, don't they?
They do.
Yes. They look everywhere. So, and that's a process. So in terms of getting ready to sell your company, I mean, a lot of times, if you can't get this information, if it's not readily available, then that adds even more stress. You're trying to operate your business, and now they're asking for, these 1,000 things that you have to go find, and that's a lot of work. And yet you can't let your employees know this whole time. Your employees are in the dark, and somebody's got to do all this work to collect all this information to get to the seller or to get to the buyer.
Right, right.
Wow.
And it can be intense. It can be difficult. Sometimes we'll recommend to a seller that they have a team of trusted individuals. They can be in the company or outside the company that are part of that team putting together that information. And the other thing we try to do is have that information put together before you actually have the buyer, because that way it's ready, and when the buyer asks for it, you give it to them.
And what are the common mistakes people make during that process where, hey, we're going through due diligence. Sellers make what kind of mistakes typically?
I think because they're stressed out, they tend to sometimes get very anxious about the process, and it does take some time, the due diligence process, and that you just have to kind of go with the flow and get the buyer what they need and let it run its course.
Typically, there's a due diligence process, and you expect to close in 60, 90, 120 days, and how often does it go over that?
Well, it will sometimes, but most of the time once the LOI is issued and accepted, usually within 90 days, you can expect the transaction to close, sometimes much sooner.
And selling a house, often a deal will fall through. We don't like that to happen, but sometimes it does. And a house is a little more of a commodity, typically, where, hey, you sold that house, you can sell it, there's another buyer coming on board. In buying a business or selling a business, it's usually sort of a one-off. It took a lot to put that deal together. How often do they fall out? And that's got to be heartbreaking.
They do, and it is heartbreaking for the seller. However, there's a lot you can do up front before you accept that LOI to vet the buyer. There's a due diligence period or process that the seller has on the buyer as well, and he's got to use that and feel comfortable going forward that it's going to work.
Yeah. You mentioned the team, and you obviously at Westwood Benson, you guys bring a team and help guide through that process. Just some closing thoughts about, what a success story might look like for somebody really trying to sell their business. I mean, is it this, uh, is it, does it ever go really smooth and you sail off into the sunset and get out on the boat, or is it always kind of a nightmare, or not a nightmare, kind of a headache as you get through it?
I think it's very intense for people, and they're happy to be through it. It can sometimes be rougher than others, but once it's done, they can exhale.
Yeah.
And they really feel good and relaxed. Now they can go on to the next stage of their life.
Nice. What about all the reps and warranties and all the other things that they've committed to and the escrow? They ever run into like, oh no, you're not out of the game until some certain point in the future?
It depends on how the deal's structured, but if it's structured like we like to structure it, there isn't a lot of reps and warranties. So.
Greg Roberti teaching us how to sell our business. We don't have time to, I could be talking about this stuff all day long. It's very interesting. And I think it's a lot, selling your business is something that is, it's kind of scary to do. Who do you talk to about that kind of thing? Because you don't want your employees to know. Typically, when you're selling the business, unless you're selling it to them, it's a nice, easy transition. But if you're going out to a third party, it can be scary. And who do you have to talk to about that? Who do you have to talk to about how to prep that business for sale? I mean, that's kind of what Haney Biz does to a certain extent, is we help guys get themselves ready for that next transition. I want to thank you for coming on the show today, Greg. And a special shout out to my buddies over at DCA Capital. These guys are a private equity firm. They do all kinds of advising on how to build a business or how to sell a business, how to take it to that transition, how to grow it, getting that capital that you need in order to scale that business, like what Josh Tillman is doing over at DialSource. Next week, you do not want to miss our all-star lineup led by Dave Sanders. And we will launch part two of our two-part entrepreneurial discussion on the topic of equity investing. We will continue to demystify the often intimidating process of raising capital. When we return, I will close my closing thoughts about the investorpreneurial viewpoint on choosing the right investor. And later we'll discuss my new fund and how we'll be using that to help businesses grow their businesses right here in Sacramento. Join the conversation on Facebook Live. This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Haney.
Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited, presented by Sun Systems Technology. I am Mark Haney, and today I am rejoined by Marcus Haney. And Marcus, today we've been talking about getting your company ready for investment, getting ready for a big event, getting ready for that next stage of life. I mean, any takeaways from today, Marcus?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that DialSource over there, Josh Tillman, those guys are doing some really, really great things and working 7 days a week. They're not looking at this investment that they just got as a sale. They're taking it and putting it right back into their company and moving forward to really progress things forward. So it's exciting to watch.
Yeah, you're starting a business and you brought on a business partner, and he brings a lot. He and his team bring a lot to the table. Tell us about what that experience is like, Marcus, and how did you choose the business partner?
Great question. Yeah, so Haney Industrial Supply got a great partner over with my buddy Jeremy Perkins over at Precision Disposable Medical Supplies. And what it's like is fantastic. I mean, I am good at getting out there in front of people, talking to them a little bit, business development side. I am not the most organized guy in the world, and I don't have all my ducks in a row on things. So having somebody or a team of guys like they have over at Precision with JD, my boy over there, shout out, you guys are in Cancun doing a great retreat, so make sure you guys are having fun. But those guys really bring something to the table that have projected me to opportunities that I might not be able to fulfill on my own, right?
Sometimes the right business partner can kind of put you in the game real quick.
No doubt.
It makes things happen faster. We talked to Josh a little bit about his business, and he started off small and went for profitability right off. During some of the discussion, we talked about, well, if he would have gotten some of that funding quicker, maybe he would have scaled it faster. But yours
right.
is going to be kind of more positioned to scale a little bit faster because you've got that business partner.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm positioned well, and I'm going to be running really lean, which is a really unique distribution model, you know, so it's really exciting to see the different places that we're going to be able to take this thing and the ability to scale, like you said, at length. Working with the state of the California and also the federal government is a big deal to show them that you really have some capability.
And I think one of the things that I took away is DCA Capital investing into Josh Tillman and Dial Source, and how Josh had surrounded himself with the right team, similar to the way you're doing, but now he's got the big infusion of capital, and now he's able to really launch in a much, much larger way with the right partner.
No doubt. Well, you've been in that similar scenario, right, with Northern Video and those kind of things, when you guys got an investment or you merged. What stage, or what do you do when you come across that situation? I mean, do you... Tell us a little bit of your thoughts.
I think there's different things that you look at. I mean, first of all, I think you look at, what am I giving up? So if you bring up, if you bring in a partner, there is a certain amount of control that you give up. You bring in a new set of personalities. You bring in a lot of change. And so you have to be thinking about, am I willing to give up my world the way that it is in exchange for that change? I might even have to give up a piece of my company in exchange for this opportunity. So I always think about, is it worth what you're giving up? So yeah, I've had to give up a little bit, but you know what? If you're still in the game, and in the Northern situation, I helped them through the exit, and we ended up putting together a little roll-up strategy. The thing started growing, and I left, and they've continued to do awesome without me, and I've gone on to the next stage of my life where I can be the investorpreneur, and I can help maybe help, like what Jeremy Perkins is doing with you, and maybe help some other guys to grow their businesses. But I first look, if I'm looking for an investor or looking for a partner, I'm thinking, well, what am I giving up, and what can they add in value, right? Because you want to be with an investor that can really add some serious value.
Probably a little bit different than yourself, right?
Yeah, how do they help you grow? What kind of experience do they bring? What kind of team do they bring? What kind of resources, maybe customers? Those things are important when you're deciding who you want to get married to. I mean, that partnership is going to need to last, and it's going to need to be a win-win. So to me, that's huge. I want somebody that's going to, if I'm looking for an investor, I want somebody who's going to add some value. And I also would be thinking about, do we have a shared end game in mind, right? Is our vision for how this thing is going to end, are we aligned on that vision? And so often you get people in there that, like a private equity company, for example, if they invest into your company, they want to get their money back through selling that company at some point, 3, 5, 7 years, your company's going to be sold again, and maybe again and again and again. Like my old companies have gotten sold multiple times, and there's a lot of change that ends up happening once it's out of your control. And so you have to be expecting that change, and you want to have a shared mindset on the end game. But I mean, I think one of the other things is, like, can you get along? I mean, this is kind of hard to tell. Sometimes a financial buyer, it's hard to be able to tell if you can get along with a financial buyer. But if you go in with a business partner who's coming in, and maybe you're bringing on a partner to run your sales force and maybe giving them a little piece of the action, or you're bringing on a partner to run your financial side to give them a little piece of the action, you got to be able, you're working with that guy, you're rolling up your sleeves together, you got to be able to get along. You want to, might be the guy, kind of guy, for me, it'd be the kind of guy I want to maybe drink a cold beverage.
I was going to say, how can you tell if that guy is in your wheelhouse?
That's the cold beer factor for
me. Gotcha. You know, cold beer factor. I like that. Well, why don't we tell our guests a little bit more about the investorpreneur side of what Mark Haney's doing a little bit, and kind of dive into what that really means to you, and maybe tell our listeners about some of the companies you've invested in.
I've invested in DCA Capital. I'm invested in there. And then
so that means Dial Source then too, right?
Yeah, I guess I own a little fraction of Dial Source. Moneta Ventures, I'm invested into there. Impact Ventures, so the SAC Angel Group, I'm going to get involved with those guys. But when you invest into a venture capital fund, you end up owning a small piece of a broader group. So that's, to me, that's fun, being involved with more opportunities, more companies. So I do some stuff that's more about fun. I'm going to get into the soccer team. I mean,
the Republic, the SAC Republic.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. But I mean, one of the most fun things I did was invest into Facebook at the IPO. Now Snapchat is coming out, so I may try to get in on the IPO. My good buddies over at Stifel Financial, you know, they can hook us up with, you know, getting in on an IPO of a public, something going public. I keep using these terms, don't I, folks? The IPO, that's initial public offering, right? So when these companies finally go public, that sometimes, it's not always a good time to get in, but it's sometimes something to consider. And Facebook, when I got into that one, it was like, oh, it went down hard.
You didn't
right
even
at the
own a computer at that time, I don't know.
But it's obviously, it's Facebook now has done pretty well for me. But I like, what I really love is the real world entrepreneurs. That's my passion. These other things are for fun, right? I do a little bit of angel. I'm investing in a bunch of small companies for fun, but I enjoy the ones where I can get in and I can actually add some value, where I can bring, you know, where I can go Haney hands on a little bit, where I can roll up my sleeves.
Like that.
And I'm kind of like, I'm kind of the handyman of small business, and my team sort of brings out, we can help bring out the best because we bring a wide variety of solutions. So those are the kind of things I look at, stuff that's maybe synergistic with the companies I already own, right? So we're starting the Haney Biz Opportunity Fund of Sacramento, and we're looking for maybe those companies that aren't ready for DCA capital yet. Maybe they're not ready for Greg Roberti to sell them yet. They need a little bit of fixing up. They bring in the handyman service, Haney Biz, and we sort of get you situated so you can take that next, you know, that next level of growth. And so I look at the industry. I mean, there's certain industries that we're a little bit better at doing, right?
You're not all tech, right?
You know,
I mean, that's
tough. Innovate, right? Because you can take any business and bring some technology, bring an innovative approach to it, and you can change it to become a differentiated model. And so I'm okay with low tech, but why not innovate low tech stuff so that it really works in the new economy? That's how I like to
think.
That's
where you make a really big difference too.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. And you know what I look for? I look for a leadership team, Marcus. I think we talk about rock stars a lot on this show. And really, when I think about where to invest, probably the main thing I look at is the CEO, right? Is he ambitious? Does he have a motor? Can he go like what we talked about, Josh Tillman, right? He's 7 days a week. I look at the motor on the guy. Does he have the authenticity of ambition, right? Mm. Where his his audio matches the video. He just doesn't talk the talk. This guy walks the walk all the time. I look at that. I want to make sure we have the shared outcome. I want somebody, if I'm going to go Haney Biz hands-on, somebody who's coachable, because I think I can bring a little bit of value. I want to learn from that guy as well, but I want to be able to help a little bit. So, you know what? I can bring the product. You know, somebody has product expertise. I can come in with a sales and marketing and accounting finance side and really round them out. That's where I look to invest these days with the Haney Biz Opportunity Fund of Sacramento. That's what that's all about. And of course, the cold beer factor. It needs to be a guy or girl or team that I can sit down and have a cold beverage with. So that's always important.
That is a must.
So, you want more Mark Haney? This is not an infomercial. I just had to share that. A lot of people want to know how they're going to get their money. I can connect you up to the people that can get you the money. We have a fund that can get you the money. We got the services that can help you to get the funding, to get the growth, to reach your dreams. I want to help you do that right here in Sacramento, and I want to meet you in person. I want you to come down to Rockland and see me. If you want to connect with me, go to LinkedIn. Go to my LinkedIn page. Connect up with me on LinkedIn. Obviously, you can listen to my podcast, hear more about the philosophies of Haney Biz and where I come from, to see if your thoughts align with mine. Maybe, who knows, maybe you might be inspired. You might learn something. It's always possible. When I return, I will share some personal thoughts about valuations and about intangible assets versus tangible assets. This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited on Facebook Live, broadcasting from Sports 1140 KCK, streaming live, podcast, and YouTube at HaneyBiz.com.
Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with Mark Haney.
You know, we get caught up in our lives and our businesses, and sometimes we forget about the assets that don't show up on the balance sheet. They're intangible. These intangible things, they're harder to see. I mean, like experience, that's goodwill, exclusivity on a product, patents. But what about the beauty of a small business, right? Small business in and of itself is cool. I mean, we are in a unique position to drive loyalty, love. I mean, I think about my buddy Jerry Wallace. He owns his company, SwimChem. He's got guys that have been with him for 20 years. I mean, these guys would do anything for one another. That has value. As you start putting a value on your business, Man, what about that stuff? Because that's the stuff that you don't see on the balance sheet, but it's real. I mean, I remember in 1973, right? I still remember 1973. Some of you guys out there might remember when the bombs went off at the rail yards in Roseville, right? Hey, I was at the Little League field. I was 10 years old, watching my little brother play his baseball game. Big explosion in the sky. Whoa, what is going on? This is kind of toward the end of the Vietnam War era, but all of a sudden, there's this massive explosion right here in our hometown. And what is this? Well, guess what? We had to evacuate our house. There had the train yards had had this big explosion of some bombs, and our neighborhood was quarantined off. We had to evacuate, and we couldn't go back to our house. We had my dad's pickup truck. That was it. And this guy named Bud Gibson, who was an employee of my dad, comes through, loans him the car. Right. And then where are we going to go? We have nowhere to go. We end up that night going over to another employee's house. Right. My dad had a small business. He had a small TV shop. And we went over to it. So we take the sales manager's car and we go over to the service manager's house. We spend the night because we had nowhere to go, you know, and that was Bob Pease. So Bud Gibson and Bob Pease, they loan the car. They put a roof over our head. In one of the most difficult, scary times, you know, you have nowhere to go. And they gave it to a guy. They gave the helping hand to their boss, a guy who would never ask for a favor, right? This is the type of guy that would never ask for a favor. And these guys come through. They took the opportunity to help a family in need, take the opportunity to help a family who would never dream about asking that. And those everyday opportunities, I think they're right in front of us every day. These opportunities, I mean, what's the value of a first job, right? Giving somebody their first job, and, you know, that has value. What's the value of a lifelong friend? Those things, those are intangible assets, but they're real. What's the value of your family name? What's the value of your name and your family? What's the value of the neighborhood and the community that you're raising your children in? I mean, these are intangible assets, but they are huge. And we have opportunities every day to change the outcome and the trajectory of these people's lives as small businesses. So as I think about, you know, helping someone, helping the next guy in line, that's what this show is all about. And I got to tell you the story about Tammy Steinkamp, right? She's my right-hand world at work, and she's like the most unselfish person in the world. And her husband, you know, there's all the flooding going on out there. And, you know, her husband, the boss of her husband, they had 15 minutes to leave their house the other day. And guess what Tammy did? She said, you know what? Tammy and Bruce Steinkamp said, you know what? You can come stay with us. They had 15 minutes to leave their house. But, you know, she reached out in an unselfish way to help somebody who had never asked for a favor, and she did that. And I think, you know, as we look at the Sacramento community right now, and Oroville, and anybody who lives along the river, this is the time that we got to think about who our friends are, right? We got to think about those valuable people in our lives, and it's time right now to reach out. And I just got to raise the five-star mug and say, you know what? Let's raise them up to the Bud Gibsons, the Bob Peases of the world, the Bruce and Tammy Steinkamps, right? To all the emergency crews that are out there, the people keeping us safe right here in this time of crisis and potential crisis. Never above you, never below you, always by your side. The